In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Got Stannis Christian McQuarrie and a special guest we have with us in the Tribune booth.
We do.
Yeah.
I don't know if her mic is on, but...
But she could lean over and say hello.
Yeah, why don't you lean over here?
Hello.
And who's
hello.
This?
Ellie Marin.
This is my 11-year-old daughter who has been home with strep all week, so she's joining me at work today.
Thank you. Would you like to share my, have a sip of my coffee?
Okay. She's antibiotic strong right now.
You are so, tough. You are so tough.
She's good. And she's having a delicious, did you see the homemade breakfast that I made for her today?
Look at that.
Canada Dry. That's what the mommies do when someone's ill. Ginger ale, but also Fritos.
Right.
Which you have to have Fritos for breakfast.
Yeah.
Also, I would recommend Cocoa Krispies and maybe donuts from Weber's.
Okay.
That's always a good.
You hit all the nutrition food groups right there.
All right. So anyway, here, let's talk about. One thing I want to talk about here is one of my favorite shows, The Americans. The Americans is about a sleeper cell of Soviet agents who are come to this country and pretend to live in Virginia, or they live in Virginia in a subdivision, and they're Carrie Russell, Felicity, with a different haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Many different haircuts.
Many different haircuts.
Accents? Does she have a Russian
Many
accent?
Accents, okay. Not for children.
Okay.
No,
absolutely
no.
Zero negatory on the children thing. But okay. They are spies. And I can't think of a better, if that were my show, to have right before the season opens, than to have the Attorney General from Alabama, Jeff Sessions, basically being accused as a Russian spy. I find this whole business of the Russia, it's kind of amusing, but the fact that that Democrats are saying that Jeff Sessions must resign because he may have had, he had a discussion with an ambassador.
And lied about it.
I don't think lie is the...
He didn't. He was asked if he had any contact, and he said no.
He was asked if he had a contact as a surrogate for the Trump campaign. He said he'd met the ambassador as his in capacity as a senator. He should have.
The only one from the Intel committee that he was on who met with the ambassador.
The ambassador also met with many senators.
Claire McCaskill, including
absolutely.
And she tweeted out she never met him.
She lied too.
So let's have.
I mean,
okay. Have you no decency, sir?
I do.
What's going on here?
We're parsing this. I mean, yeah. I get the argument, and I've known Jeff Sessions for 20 years now.
He was have a little background here.
Okay.
Award-winning cartoonist, editorial cartoonist, Scott Stannis for the Tribune, came from Alabama.
With a banjo on my knee.
With a banjo on his knee, and Jeff Sessions in his mind. He knows Jeff Sessions. He knows all those good old boys in Alabama.
Everybody in Alabama
Tell us about the Russian spy. Jeff Sessions.
Well, yeah, the Russian spy. He's not smart enough to be a spy, quite frankly. I'm a spy or dupe. I mean, you have to admit, his explanation is, how can I put this politely, lawyerly. It parses the question.
Did he meet the Russian spy in a plane in a secret meeting on a tarmac?
He didn't, which would have been more awesome, which would have made me respect him a lot more, quite frankly. Uh-huh. The overcoat and the fedoras and the rain.
Right. with Natasha.
But yeah. But this is, I mean, it wasn't a good moment for him. Is it perjury? I've talked to a number of lawyers. They seem to think that it's not. It doesn't rise to that level.
The esteemed Mike Monaco says absolutely not.
Oh, well then, yeah, then he's in the clear.
But, but the explanation just still kind of is one of those ticky-tacky, lawyerly, you know, what's the meaning of is?
No, it's not.
So the question, though, from Senator Franken was whether
From Senator Stuart Smalley.
Okay.
Hey, Reagan was a was an actor.
Yeah. He wasn't a clown on Saturday Night Live. Go on.
Was whether or not Jeff Sessions, if nominated and appointed, would investigate. How would he handle allegations of Russian contact with the campaign? And he volunteered, you know, I don't know anything about that. I never talked to anyone. And so I wouldn't know anything about it. And then the questioning moved on. So did he omit information? Absolutely. Even if in that moment he did not connect the dots that in his role as Armed Services Committee member, he met with the ambassador and met with many other ambassadors, he should have at some point clarified the record.
He could have come back and sent something to the Senate and said, I did meet with the ambassador as... He could have done that.
He should have done that.
And he addressed himself, addressed the issue at his news conference last week, and he said that he would recuse himself from any investigation involving the Russians and Trump and so forth. But here's the deal. That's what a lawyer does. You recuse yourself. That's not some big victory. That's not a head held high by the warrior Schumer that he won a victory here. This is what you do. He did everything by the book. Everything.
And the bigger picture here is that the Democrats keep using this to try to discredit Trump's victory when, in fact, there is no evidence that whatever the Russians did, and yes, they did, they meddled in the sense where they used propaganda and, of course, the leak to the dig into the DNC emails, etc. But by no means did they turn the election. Did they tip votes? Were they in the voting booth?
Yes, they did. They turned the election. If it weren't for the Russians, Hillary would be president. Oh, boy, yeah.
But what is the big deal? That's what I want to know. What's the big deal?
If it weren't for the Russians, there wouldn't be any slaughter in Chicago. The gangs wouldn't be killing each other. There wouldn't be crime. There wouldn't be anything wrong. We'd be happy.
And at long last, the seas would be lowering.
The seas would be lowered. The planet would heal. Good. That's an invite for Jeff Carlin to find that clip. And after the election, Trump could lean forward and tell the ambassador, after the next election, I'll have a little more flexibility. Tell Vlad.
That's how you do it.
You're right.
It's just so silly because I don't believe that there has been any real evidence that they changed a single mind. And even the propaganda that they released and talked about on Russian media was more to undermine our democratic process than it was. I mean, they believed, I think, I've read, that Hillary was going to win. So just all of this ginning up is to continue this narrative of not my president, not elected, and I'm tired of it. It's March.
We'll get used to it.
Get over it,
not
Democrats.
Ever get over it.
I have a question.
Yes.
So we keep seeing more and more names coming out, people who are within the campaign, and all the way up to like a Jared Kushner type, who've had interactions with Russian officials and
ambassadors. Right.
You're right. Now, that doesn't bother anybody, regardless of what party or who won, that a campaign is advising or getting advice or sharing information of one form or another, because that's why you have meetings.
Let me tell you what my view is. And this is based on nothing but the fact that I read a lot of fiction. If you see an official of any kind meeting with an ambassador of any kind at a formal meeting, like in their office or at an event. Mm-hmm. I've seen ambassadors with politicians and the press wearing their sashes at those ridiculous nerd proms in Washington where the journalists dress up and prance and sing for the king. I've seen that. That's not what we should worry about. Don't worry about the ambassador. You worry about the guy who's holding the bags. In a embassy, you don't worry about the ambassador. You worry about the little guy who's looks like he's the one who's running errands. The nebbish. That's the spy master. Even if he's even there.
Right.
It's usually not. I mean, so this whole, I think Kristen is correct. This is an effort to undermine the president. It's also a partisan thing. It's a clearly partisan. Should we investigate it, Scott Stennis? Yes, but yeah. Is there a cost to the Democrats and to the press? The question for you.
Oh, absolutely.
By using the Russian thing to paper over what we still have not dealt with, which is senior journalists in the Beltway colluding with the Democratic Party as exposed by WikiLeaks. This is a way to paper over all that as if we'd... What say you?
It's a sexier story. I'm not going to totally dismiss the Russian connection. They clearly like to get involved in elections in the Western world. And
as do we.
Well, okay.
As we do.
We're just better at it.
Right. That's what this comes down to.
They're just, Ukraine.
Trump's consigliaries have dealt with Ukraine.
But I mean, as a nation, there's an argument we may have fomented revolution in Ukraine. Okay? And push that. We push it in all other countries.
Okay, but that we still wouldn't like it if it was in our election. The thing that's going to kill the Democrats is it was the joint session of Congress, and their looks on their faces, their reactions to the speech was childish. I'm tired of watching the children. I'm waiting for the adults to come into the room. Frankly, Donald Trump's speech was phenomenal, and it looks like we finally may have gotten one.
And that's not a diss.
I know.
On any
weird
children who might be in the room, because
yeah,
we
no
have
offense
a child
to
in the
children.
Room.
Actually,
she's a gracious young lady.
There are
she'd probably be better,
she's
but
quietly
future
eating her
Cheetos.
I know. That's as quiet as I've okay ever heard someone eat munchies. That's
what like about that, Jeff? They sat on their hands. The Navy SEAL's wife was
they didn't
weeping
sit on their hands during that.
Oh, they did.
They did not, John. That's BS. Look it up.
No, that's
the look at the videos. That did right not happen. That's being pushed by right-wing BS makers.
I don't want to.
But that's the thing is I've got relatives who keep throwing that out there. Like, oh yeah, look, Republicans or Democrats are awful. They sat while they were trying to honor a dead man and his wife. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. That absolutely did not happen.
Okay, so what happened?
It was parlor games that happens in every joint session. When Obama spoke, who yelled liar during his speech? It was a Republican.
When I thought it was Obama yelling at the Supreme Court. Oh no, that was no, that's, he did it in the he just called them liars in a different
well,
in a
right
wagged
way
his finger at him.
Exactly, right. But I'm saying we've got it nice here. If you look at European politics and Parliament, they get up and scream at each other. They throw things at each other.
We used to shoot each other in the good old days.
They made a
exactly
play about it.
They have a musical about it.
They used to take canes and cane each other.
Yes, mm-hmm. Those were the days. Oh.
And they'd have duels.
That's
exactly
what we should do.
We're so much.
Plus, I like the dresses in those days too. The women, I love those dresses that they wore.
And wigs, John. You want to wear
so
a wig?
So painful.
I don't want to wear a wig, but I would think I would like a waistcoat and like those.
I can see this.
Little pantalones.
Where you pull your socks up high, and have your little belt buckle on your shoe.
Had a scabbard in there.
A scabbard, yes. Mm. Aaron Burr, yeah.
I'm with Scott though. That speech was very good.
The Trump speech was terrific.
What was so good about it?
It was defined, it was refined, and it was pointed at what his goals were and spoke more than just to his base. It spoke to both sides. It spoke to a larger audience, the Americans, all of us.
You don't think so? I thought it was elegant. I thought it was eloquent. I thought it elevated the work of politics, which can be that of statesmen, and I was really
sounded like a Democrat to me.
What?
See, I didn't. I was listening. No. I think a lot of those speeches are so carefully messaged, yes, every word. So mm-hmm. I was trying to imagine: could Obama have given this speech? Could George W. have given this speech? And I don't think so. I mean, he's still stuck with his.
I meant a Democrat that I used to be before the Democrats left me.
Oh, okay, a more centrist, the old, right, type of Democrat, right? before they became radicalized.
Have you no decency?
I mean, but I thought he struck some of the same themes where he talked about border security as being the compassionate way to deal with the safety of the American people, that it is not, that it is compassionate to do that and to vet and to have a pause and to have a temporary travel ban. So, you know, he didn't sidestep a lot of the issues that have gotten him into trouble in the past few
months. It was a style thing, right? Jeff Carlin, wasn't it a style thing that he basically said a lot of the same things, but he did it in such a way that the voices of the status quo, including Chris Wallace, who was so upset when Trump, remember when he hinted that he wouldn't bow to the election results before the
right.
Election. Remember how they were, the status quo was, oh my God, the establishment was so upset. But he spoke in establishment terms. He used establishment language, and therefore they thought, oh, presidential.
Well, but it was guided. I mean, when he's off the cuff, he says things that
contradict. That's what I like.
Yeah, I mean, it's entertaining and it's interesting. And like you said, it upsets the status quo, which is what we need.
That's what I'm about.
Right. But at the same time, when he contradicts himself in his own statements or his own ramblings, or he goes back and forth on things and it doesn't make any sense, well, then it's a mixed message. And how can I trust you as a leader? If you can come out and show me that you can be, statesmanly, and you can be that person,
like
then I can get in line behind you and say, oh, well, maybe you've got some good, maybe you can get somebody in a room, talk to them logically and get them to come around to you and they don't agree to you like a Democrat.
Yeah, because when he's off the cuff, I'm sorry, John, but he's incoherent sometimes. Yeah.
Incoherent.
He tries to crack Opa. Jokes, and it just he'll start to go off on a little tangent.
He has a little Eddie Verdoliak in him.
is that what it is?
Kind of hurts him in that context, right?
He just absolutely. Has
to
be the top
I'm still dog. Trying to fact check the issue of Democrats and whether they stood. The Washington Times reported, now this is a right-leaning newspaper, but that some Democrats didn't applaud. So they might have been standing, but I don't think they were clapping.
No, it was the former head of the DNC. Wasserman Schultz.
Yes, and speaking of which, now that the Democrats have a Hillary Clinton puppet in there, an establishment Democratic puppet to run the
Perez.
Democratic Party, what do you think? Does that deal with their problems with their left wing?
No, because I mean, I thought he's maybe to the right of. The person he ran against, whose name is escaping me, Ellison. But no, I mean, he's still talking about big government, government programs. We're going to provide all of your health care and all of your, we are the party of the middle class. And, there is no center anymore for the Democratic Party.
Yeah, but during his acceptance speech, it was the most bizarre moment.
This is Tom Perez.
Perez is right. He's now head of the Democratic National Committee. He said of the three things he was going to attack were the policies of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Well, Joe Arpaio is, of course, the sheriff of Maricopa County in Arizona.
He's gone.
He just lost election.
Right.
And he's 80-something years old.
It's like
I will fight the policies of Mussolini. You can count on it.
It's like kind of putting Colonel Sanders, the old dead Colonel Sanders, up to give your, rebuttal speech, which I think the Democrats did, right?
Yeah.
They put some old geezer up there like,
Oh my gosh.
I say back.
That is exactly how he said. It was the Kentucky governor.
Former loser.
Yeah. You Republican bastard, stay off my lawn.
Right.
Okay.
He looked like he needed to change his diapers.
Did he?
Yeah.
Depends. Right. Maybe they were all sitting back there in the cafe.
Right.
Around the Cracker Barrel.
So that's all. That's all you got.
And Trump came out and again was so polished and it was not off the rails or anything. And the response, there was like an anticipation of that. And they're like, this is the guy who's leading us. Really? Like, really? That's what you came up with? You didn't? You weren't duped.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
Could we just switch gears for a second?
Mm-hmm.
Because we talk politics a lot, and we'll have a lot of politics.
Okay.
But can we talk about what's going on in this culture as a big event takes place in springtime? It's not baseball. It's not even the Chicago Fire, which opened in Columbus on Saturday and then come back to town the next week. It is Lent. It's the Lenten season. And I just wonder, since the three of us are three of the five who can meet at, in the Chicago Tribune without, you know, in our cell of three,
mm-hmm.
so that we can't, can't give up the others. We cover Christmas in a big way. Christmas this, Christmas that. But Lent is leading us to the resurrection of Christ. And we don't ever, hardly, talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
I think, well, I can only speak for Catholics, for myself as a Catholic, and I just think it's a more subdued time. You know, there are no Easter songs, and there's no
Easter parade, Easter shoes, mm-hmm. Easter sales.
Yeah, I mean, it is supposed to be, and you know, like with Lent, you do give something up, but there's been a push in recent years to do something. You know, instead of giving something up, do something in exchange.
Acts versus faith. I don't want to get into old there aren't any Protestants here. I wish I had some, but yeah.
Yeah. So I do think it's just more of a sober, it's supposed to be a quieter, calmer, more reflective, type of holiday, if you even call it a holiday. So I'm glad it's not as commercialized as Christmas.
But what about the cover? How do the newspaper, the Christian world is a huge billions of people.
Yeah.
I've got a theory, Jim.
Yes, why can't we cover it?
Of the two holidays, if you want to call them holidays or not, but of the two events, Christmas is the one that's a celebration of life and joy, and, you know, it's the baby Jesus. I mean,
you mean Jesus is the gift.
Right.
And something I try to remind people. Yeah.
And so
it's not a Volvo.
Right. It's not a beret with a big ribbon on it.
I've never gotten one of those in my driveway.
Yeah, I know.
Where's my Lexus?
Go on.
Every time I see it, I tell Janine, that would be a great gift.
Go on.
I would be so
diamonds
happy.
And cars, the girl's best friend.
So, okay. So
that's why it's a celebration, and but Lent and actually Easter, I mean, Easter is a more important and a more sacrosanct day. And so
one is the birth of Christ, where we give gifts and pretend that there's no Christ in it.
Right.
And a large part, media. Mm-hmm. I'm talking media.
Right. Ones.
The other is a fundamental, huge deal about the resurrection of Christ as understood by billions of Christians around the world.
But I
mean not only Catholics right. and Protestants who are heretics to me, but also Orthodox, okay? The true original. But I'm just teasing. We don't cover religion in a way like that. I don't know why we can't. Why are you putting, this is for you, man. Jeff and Scott.
Scott's packing his bag.
You're
He's
packing your
enough.
Bag. This is,
He's out of here.
I'm sorry. Was I boring you?
I've had enough of this. No, at all. I have to be somewhere else.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
That's okay.
That's why I brought this whole thing up.
Don't you think that religion, though, I mean, first off, we were talking earlier, and you bring religion now up in a newsroom, and people scoff at you, or they sneer at you, or they sniff and oh, you believe that nonsense. I mean,
right. We believe in government, though, yeah.
Oh, well, that's the new religion, isn't
right.
it? Well, the self is the new religion. The self is the new Christ. I mean, that's where we've gone as a country.
It's all the Twitter.
Yeah.
We're all our own columnist and our own God, right?
Well, I don't know about columnists. I think you're a good guy.
No, but you know what I mean. We all have a voice, I guess. I don't know.
No, don't you think that there's, I mean, they talk about war on Christmas, a war on, and that's draconian. I do believe that there is an absolute, societal movement to despise, to diminish, Christians and anyone who's a Christian of good faith. And like I mentioned, you're scoffed at. You're laughed at. You are ridiculous. You are a child. There's something wrong with you.
But even so, they're in terms of the news business, there are billions of people out there, and it doesn't seem as if we understand as the media the language to address the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why
is. What's the coverage? What a coverage would you expect? Let's say if it was flipped over and it was.
I expect more than just a photograph of Holy Easter Sunday or Saturday night going into Sunday, midnight, liturgy, mass, whatever, where the light comes from the altar at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because then you have the Greeks and the Roman Catholics always fighting.
Right.
The priests the monks are punching each other. There's always something like that going on. But in the name of God.
Amen.
But I don't know. It's just that we don't have an ability or a way to address these issues in a medium.
But what's the issue? I don't understand.
The issue of faith, the issue of faith, of belief. These are things that are fundamental to many people. We just kind of paper over them. There was a recent thing about, what was that, glitter business?
Oh, good. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't want to criticize anybody for their lifestyle and how that lifestyle may or may not jive with Christianity or Christian teaching of old. It's something for everyone to decide. But you put glitter in a
sacrament.
In a sacrament?
I'm not familiar with this story.
You don't.
There was on Ash Wednesday, you are supposed to go to Mass and get
for
ashes
Catholics
on your forehead as a symbol of the palms from the Sunday before, the ashes of the palms. And I'd have to look up, somebody started adding glitter to the ashes. And
it was sort
it's like
of
having,
I think,
sparkling wine for communion.
It was glitter.
Well, no, I wouldn't object to that.
It was some kind of glitter thing for parishes or congregations, I think it was Methodist, that were gay, you know, gay rights.
Okay.
So it was like a gay glitter thing in the...
unifying thing?
I don't know how that jives. I don't know how that works. It's. I'm not trying to tell people how to live or how to believe. It just, to me, the way it was addressed was so... In all the stories I read, it was just mentioned that some may criticize this. And I'm thinking of all the people who would freak if you said, we'll put glitter in. Let's say we'll put gold and blue and gold glitter that's for Notre Dame Catholics. I don't think they'd like that.
It's probably, you know, if you go.
It wasn't Catholic, by the way.
Oh, it wasn't.
Well, because Catholic, it is a sacrament. I don't know. In your church, I assume it is also. And
yes.
Okay, you're right. I'm seeing it. It was. It was Christians who celebrate Ash Wednesday, but as a hat tip to the LGBT community.
And I'm not trying to criticize the LGBT community. I just find that it's more of an issue of how we cover things, and how we deal with it in the media. And here comes another question for you guys. I've been wrestling with this. In my column, I call people out. Sometimes I wouldn't say cruel, but sometimes I can be.
It can be perceived as cruel.
I guess I can be cruel. I am cruel sometimes. When I see people that I think deserve a smack, I give it to them. And I do things like, remember I do that, Democrat, DeLeo or whatever. I've noticed other writers now copying this, and I do that, and it's kind of a dig. But here's my problem. Can I justify or deal with being a Christian and writing columns that call people out?
I've actually talked to my... No,
Scott's
waving his hand over here.
Because that's a question I've asked myself a million times, because as a cartoonist, my job is to be even meaner than you are, and I can't talk.
Many would doubt you, but yes,
I can be. I can't shade it. But I ask myself, and I've asked a number of priests that question, because you're supposed to be forgiving, you're supposed to be kind, you're supposed and
turn the other cheek.
In my faith, every priest I've talked to has said, I think God understands. That's a quote.
Wow.
I think God.
God has a sense of humor.
Am I crazy to even bring this up?
No, I mean, I think that way sometimes too, especially during Lent. Yeah, or just when I've gotten too hyperbolic or too much on a high horse or too much thinking that I have the moral position. Mm-hmm. I think that's the danger. As long as you're always open to being wrong and, making mistakes and, you know, you're not always trying to be so righteous from a position when you write those pieces. Sometimes it's okay to go back and tone them down a little bit. But, it's also good to keep questioning yourself and making sure that you're not.
That's all good and true. And I think of the many people I read on a regular basis, I find you to be perhaps the most fair.
I think a lot of people would disagree with you.
I see you take positions.
Fair in the world of realty, yeah. I mean, the people who talk
fairer than
heretic are usually blinded by the truth of what's really going on.
It's usually tribal barking. Oh, sorry again. That was unchristian of me. But
you're going to have a lot to confess.
I don't know, Kristen, if I can. I wonder if. And that whole thing about the Pharisee, my favorite story, the Pharisee and the publican, where the Pharisee's in front of the church. Bye, Scott.
Bye, Scott.
The Pharisee's in front of the church, and he's a good man talking about all his good acts to God. And here's the other, the publican in the back pew saying, just, kid you lay some, please forgive me. And I just can't. I don't know. Am I being a baby?
No, I think sometimes it's hard to reconcile what we do with that idea of forgiveness and turn the other cheek and, being humble and not putting yourself out there, you know, being kind of a quiet
in the back pew
giver.
Where you should be, not on page two telling everybody what to do.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's what bothers me about it.
Yeah.
I love my job. Don't get me wrong. But
don't you think that the reason you have your job and the reason that you get passionate about the topics on which you write have to do with channeling a higher power? I mean, you're not where you're at because there wasn't some sort of guidance and intervention from, you know.
I can't approach that that way. I cannot think that I'm a vehicle or someone or
that's,
a tool for someone.
I think that's where the line is. I mean, religion, and I grew up Catholic.
Yeah.
Religion is a personal thing, in always, in my opinion. It's a community thing, obviously, when you get together and those people.
The church means community.
Right. And so, but on the spiritual level, it's a personal thing. It's, you know, how do you sleep at the end of the day? And if you reflect on what you've done, say, you know, I wrote about this XYZ, and it may not have been the most godly thing or to do, but at the end of the night, you're asking for, you know, the understanding of your spirit, then I think you're all right with it. I don't think you owe it to anybody. Now, if you were a priest and you were chosen to be a vessel of God and a speaker, a font of God, I think it would be a different question. I think it would.
I don't think I'm speaking for.
Absolutely.
The Holy Spirit does that. Although, you know what? It takes me a long time to write a column. I don't know how long does it take you to write one, Kristen.
It completely depends on the topic. Sometimes an hour. Sometimes I have to mull it over for days.
Yeah. You know? And, so you never know why that is, right?
Yeah. You don't.
How's she feeling?
She's good. Ellie, tell us a little bit about. You go to Catholic school. Did you learn about Lent, and did you give something up for Lent?
Well, I haven't really.
Get a little closer.
I don't know what I should give up.
Oh, you better decide. You're already like two. We're 2 days in here.
That means.
I have some suggestions. What? How about you give up social media, your phone?
I don't think I could go for 40 days without that.
You don't think you could go 40 days without that?
No.
That's about, the point.
How about you give
I
up
wrote about
pop,
that recently.
Pop and sugar?
Maybe.
What?
How about you help me tonight when I have to make 60 lunches for the homeless guys on Wacker Drive, and that'll be our act this week of being proactive about Lent.
Don't I always do that?
Yes, actually you do.
I'll tell you a story about the homeless guys on Wacker Drive. So Sam Sianis, my friend, and I've known him for, 40 years and know his family. He runs the Billy Goat. He's older now. He used to have the cops pick up the homeless for dinner. It wasn't like how you're doing it, like a volunteer. Sam's not, he's a pretty direct fellow. And he said, look, it was Christmas. He said, the bums need something to eat. So he went to restaurants and got big pans of pasticho and moussaka and everything and lamb and everything to feed like 100. And he sent the police in the 18th district wagons because they eat there, right? He said, I need a couple wagons. Go get some bums and bring them here for food.
I'm sure he called them bums too. I love
or
it.
Homeless. He didn't call them homeless. Whatever.
I'm sure he called it. Really, whatever the Greek word is for bum.
Yeah, yeah. So then they go out and they just basically grab a bunch of bum of homeless and they throw them in the wagons. Mm-hmm. Where are we going? You're going to go eat. Okay, shut up. And they throw them in. They stuff them like sardines. They bring three wagons. They bring them to the Billy Goat. Sam's like there. He's got, his clean apron on and his, he's shaved and come on in, gentlemen. And he has them sit down and he's very, very, Sam's a very devout, Christian. And he has them sit down and he's got paper plates and food and everything. I mean, like for 100 people and he's feeding them like kings. One guy stands up and says, I can't eat this food. And the guy at Sam says, why? He says, there's not China. It's paper plates. I need to eat off China.
No.
Sam's like, get out.
Yeah.
He's like, no more bumps in my store.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like a little ungrateful,
I just thought
a little ungrateful person there.
One other thing that bothers me. Now, in Lent, a lot of people don't eat meat. Some do. It depends. Why is it that in Lenten times, Burger King or McDonald's will say, 6 burgers for 3 cents. Why do we have these specials of meat?
Do they?
Or maybe I just noticed that.
Fish. I know they do the like
I was going to say, I've seen them promote the...
Do 2 fish sandwiches for $5 or whatever it
or
is.
Maybe I'm just noticing it that way.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it might be always that way.
Like 6 burgers for a penny.
Right.
You know, it seems.
When do we get our pepper and egg sandwiches from?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. We gotta find. Where do you guys go for pepper and eggs?
I don't go anywhere. I usually make them.
Janssen's.
But I like.
Janssen's not too far from.
No, Janssen's would be a good spot.
Doesn't the goat do it?
Mm-hmm.
Does the goat
do it?
I think
so.
Yeah. You can pepper and egg every morning.
Yeah, in the morning.
You know.
Yeah.
Sam used to eat a lot of that. Used to eat a big pile of spinach with garlic.
Oh boy.
That's good. Ooh,
good
I love
for
it.
You.
Sauteed
Sounds
spinach.
Good. Wilted spinach. My kids will eat that, won't you?
No.
One closing thought on the Lent thing. The more greens you eat, if you eat a lot of greens, Mike Byrne, who's a friend of mine and a podiatrist to the stars, I call him. He's out in Oakland, but he deals with every Southside politician goes to Mike Byrne from everybody. So. And once he sent me a whole box of Johnny's Red Hots at the other station. Remember that, Jeff? So Mike says that with everybody fasting and eating a lot of greens, what happens is he starts getting calls around Easter where people's toes start blowing up because gout, if you eat a lot of greens, and people are trying to cut down on carbs so they don't get fat for spring, for summer.
You gotta get
but
that
they're
bikini,
eating a lot.
John
me and the Speedo.
Yeah,
leopard skin. Gout.
That is the strangest thing I've ever
Isn't
heard.
Isn't it? Everybody, thanks a lot for joining us. Scott Stannis, Kristen McQueary, her daughter,
Ellie,
Jeff Carlin, me, John Cass. It's been the Chicago Way. Might take a week off or so where Jeff's going out of town, right?
Yep, I got to go to Mexico for work.
Going to Mexico, yeah, it's really tough. Yeah, Jeff and Rokan and Anna in Mexico.
Wow.
Behave, Jeff.